hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. It is good to have you with us here on Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden. Our website is redicecreations.com, where you'll find a lot more of our open, honest investigations, radio programs, videos, and news articles examining the lies and the issues of our times and the challenges that we face. Today we have Max Egan back with us from the Crow House down in Australia, and we are going to talk about Zionist terrorism in Gaza and the war and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. We are also going to discuss the utter lies in the Zionist-controlled press about this issue and the immense double standards of the Jews and Israelis comparing their own policy, both on ethnocentrism and self-interest, to what kind of policy is pushed through their lobby groups on the rest of the world, especially the West, through media, politics, think tanks, and other organizations. We'll also talk about some of the massive amounts of disinformation surrounding World War II history, and especially what happened to Germany, and put this into context in regards to what we see happening today, now, in Palestine. Welcome back, Max. Good talking with you again. How have you been? It's been a couple of years since we last talked. Of course, a lot of things going on, but nonetheless, it's good to have you back. It's good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Henrik. It's good to be back. Very, very delicate times we're facing at the moment, brother. It's been an interesting ride to get here, for sure.
Yeah, it always is. It's a lot of things going on in the world, of course. The issue of the Jews and the Palestinians. I mean, these situations have occurred, in my estimate, from 1948 and onwards, every few years, with varying degree of intensity, more or less, where we have these extreme violent excursions erupt not every other year or so, but definitely with a frequency that we can monitor all the way back to the beginning, where the Zionists, of course, continue to terrorize the Palestinians, and the media can continue to take the side of Israel. What is your view of the latest thing that has been that we've seen, this wave of terror and everything else? Because you've been down there yourself, you have friends in Gaza at this stage, or down in Palestine. What just give it as an estimation of what is going on here, Max?
Well, what's going on with the current incursion into Gaza is blatant, open, and the most brutal of ethnic cleansing is exactly what's happening. I actually called this before they went in. As soon as I heard there was a column of tanks and 60,000 troops they were going to send into Gaza Strip, I said, this is ethnic cleansing. And I think they've set the whole thing up very cleverly, Henrik. I think this is why they've destabilized the entire area. And, you know, look, with the whole Arab Spring, I think the whole Arab Spring has been leading towards this. They've destabilized every region in the area so that nobody can get to Gaza at this time. There's no assistance coming for these people. And they're able to ethnically cleanse the whole strip. I've actually tried to create a human shield operation. When I first saw it, I thought, well, let's get all these people that are protesting, like a couple of thousand of us, and let's go down there and be human shields and stop Israel doing what they're doing. But they're just shooting human shields anyway. They're giving no consideration to them. And I've had to step back and realize that even if I did that, there's actually no way to get there. The only way you could really get there would be on a flotilla. And that's if you'd get in, because they've destabilized the entire region around Gaza and they're just ethnically cleansing the whole strip. There's actually been a huge oil and gas find right off Gaza Strip that Israel wants. And that's one of the reasons they're doing it. But it's the ongoing thing. They just want to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians and turn the whole place into Israel. They've been slowly doing it for years, like 66 years. And it's always been presented to the world as a conflict, like it's two nations at war. This is the way the media portrays it. It's so backwards, you know. What you've got is you were talking about often on this show, I believe, you've got a bunch of Europeans who came down and stole a country, and they've been ethnically cleansing the local populace ever since for the last 66 years. And what the Palestinians are in Gaza is the last resistance of Palestine still desperately trying to hold on to their country and get people to notice them, that they're actually people. And they're painted to the world as terrorists, and they're absolutely not. You look at this incursion that Israel has made in there now. It's excuse me, it's horrific. It's the most brutal assault I've ever seen. It's the English or the British Parliament or the Irish Parliament actually summed it up very succinctly. Claire Daly, when she said it was the equivalent of the world's heavyweight champion taking on a newborn baby. This is what we're seeing here. And these are beautiful, gentle people, and they're portrayed as terrorists, and we see Israel go in there and unleash the most brutal wave of terrorism upon these people while claiming they're terrorists and claiming they're defending themselves. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
The video that I showed you before, I mean, a whole suburb in 1 hour, just gone. These are residential buildings, people living in all of these buildings. They're gone. They're telling us the death toll is like 1,000 or something. I would suggest that it's many, many thousands.
Yeah, what was it? They talked about they had some a tap technique, right? They tapped on the ceiling, they said, right? About, was it like 20 seconds before they bombed the shit out of these neighborhoods, you know?
Well, it's a 60-second. I call it a knock on the roof, yeah, 60 right. seconds. Yeah. But and think about this as well. Oh, we're doing them a favor. We're letting them know we're going to bomb the hell out of their houses. What is this? Okay, hi there. You have 60 seconds to live. Have a nice day. Yeah. That's what they're saying. So that we want you to live the last minute of your life in utter terror. That's really what these knock on the roofs are.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the worst kind of terrorism that I've ever seen. And the weapons that they're using, Henrik, if you look at some of the weapons, is this experimental dime ammunition, these flashe bombs. This dime ammunition literally rips the flesh from your bone. It bears you down to the skeleton. This has been used on children. The Gaza population is over half children. You know, 1.8 million people packed into an area 25 miles long, 4.5 to 5 miles wide, over 900,000 children, and they call this a war. This is not a war. This is ethnic cleansing of the last resistance of Palestine. And it's been so orchestrated and so well contrived. And people really need to step back and see what this is. I mean, I've been screaming from the rooftops about this. This is the most important event since 9/11, this incursion into Gaza, because this is legitimizing ethnic cleansing by a Western superpower. This isn't Rwanda. This isn't Panama. This isn't some Idi Amin government. This is Israel. Ethnically cleansing the Palestinian people with the most brutal of weaponry while the world cheers them on and says, yeah, yeah, go kill the terrorist. You know, and it's setting a new precedent. And some of the things that Netanyahu has said in his speeches, what message are we sending if we allow terrorists to believe that they can hide in a civilian population? What is the moral thing to do? And he's saying basically the moral thing to do is to destroy the civilian population because there might be a terrorist in there. This is some of the dangers that I've been saying to people about going off and forming alternate communities. Your little hub of bubble of you know, peace over there, it's not going to last because it's isolated from this community. They'll just come and take you out later. They want you to go and form these alternate communities. We have community here. We need to transform this one by changing the way we interact with each other and paying attention to what's going on in the world. You know, these little alternate systems that people set up. All they got to do is name one of you as a terrorist, and that's it. They'll take out the whole community and say you did it. And they're doing that in Gaza. They're setting the precedent for it right now. It's shifted the goalposts. It's taken things to a whole new level. And something we need to realize is that even with all the riots and protests and people screaming out about this, none of our governments are doing anything about it. Now, this is a brutal and blatant war crime. It's brutal and blatant ethnic cleansing with weapons from nightmares, and our governments are supporting it. They're not saying anything. Whether they're scared of Israel or not, the right thing to do in this matter is to stand up, and they're not doing so. And if you live in a country and your government is supporting Israel's action in Gaza right now, then you have a government that supports ethnic cleansing, and you need to pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly expert in ethnic cleansing. I mean, I think it says more about our governments to a certain degree than it does about theirs, and there's so many nuances to this that we can get into and go through with a fine tooth comb, and we certainly can. But I mean, just look at how, you know, the incursions that they claim, you know, that Germany did into Czechoslovakia or Poland or something like that, right? When there was conflicts on the borders between German people in these countries and whatnot, and how the rest of the world basically declared war on Germany at that stage. This is not something that is happening to Israel when they now are ethnically cleansing Palestinians. I think it speaks quite a bit more about our governments and the complacency, but also being complicit in these actions. I think that it speaks of this idea that we are controlled in the Western world by the same forces that are operating Israel. That's what it says to me anyway. And just you spoke about the muscles, the heavyweight champions. The fact is that who are providing those muscles? Well, the United States are inadvertently, Europe are inadvertently, Germany, especially through payments and reparations and everything else. So it's like a whole financial guilt-ridden support system that is in place for Israel, and no one dares to criticize them for the risk of being called an anti-Semites. That's what I think we're dealing with here.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's the whole Khazar system. That's who it is. I mean, that's where it came from. The Khazar, the whole concept of the Khazars has been quite well known now. I actually did a whole presentation about it a couple of months ago right around Australia and let people know what's going on here, who these people are. You know, they're not the original people that are supposed to have the land. We all know this now. A lot of people do. But these people have infiltrated everything. There's Khazars and these Zionist Khazars. And you can't even use the word Jew. I mean, they hide behind the smokescreen of the Jews. And actually, the Semitic Jews in Israel are the most downtrodden people in all of Israel. The Semitic Jews actually lived there in peace for thousands of years. So they hide behind the smokescreen of anti-Semitic. They commit all of these war crimes, and you can't speak out against Israel because you're anti-Semitic. But it's got to the stage where we have to speak out about this. We can't allow these sort of war crimes to continue and allow war crimes, ethnic cleansing, complete corruption and genocide and all of the things they do to hide behind the word anti-Semitic. It's just not acceptable. And really what Israel has done since being formed, is it's carried out war and acts of aggression against all of the Semitic races around it since its inception. I mean, the government of Israel is perhaps the most anti-Semitic organization on the planet if you look at its actions. Even what it's done to its own people by the level of programming in the Israeli people, the education system that they're given and the level of programming, these people are literally programmed to hate Arabs. See, everything Israel does.
Oh, and others too. I mean, my God, I watched, don't mean to cut you off, Max, but I watched a video the other day I brought up when we talked with David Icke, but it's called Defamation. I don't know if you ever saw it. It's from 2009. It was a Jewish guy who did it, but extremely telling. I'm bringing it up again because I hope our audience out there will find it on YouTube. We linked it up a while back, so search for it on our website as well. We have it linked up right there, the whole movie. And just look at the level of programming on these young Jewish children about basically they're led to believe that in the entire rest of the world, and specifically Europe, of course, there's basically just an army of drooling Nazis just waiting to kill Jews, you know? And this intense fear-based kind of programming and frankly, the way that they're, I don't understand how they can be doing this to their own children as a way of kind of strengthening, you know, with group psychology, victimhood and everything else so that they feel that they are more targeted out there than any other race or group, whatever you want to call them, or religious affiliation. But I think that they're doing it such so that they, in their own survival mechanism type of approach, will do anything that they dare to do in order to, in their view, basically survive and overcome this threat to them that exists out there in the world. And they're using their own children and programming them, you know, themselves within their own group very, very efficiently.
Exactly, exactly. They're programmed to believe that the world hates them and that everybody is out to get them, and they're programmed to always be on the defensive. And they're put through military, and they're trained to be very, very brutal. And it's a scary thing, you know. And a lot of what this in Gaza as well, what they're doing, I mean, the sheer brutality that Benjamin Netanyahu is unleashing for all the world to see, you know, like really, really brutal. They just shelled Al-Shifa Hospital yesterday. Every time they shell a hospital, this is a war crime. Every time they shoot an ambulance, this is a war crime. Every time they use flashe bombs and dime ammunition and white phosphorus, these are all war crimes. And there is no public outcry. There was a suggestion that perhaps they may have committed war crimes by the UN. I mean, are they kidding? All they got to do is look around. So you've got to really see what's going on here. The brutality that they unleash, it's like a culture that hates life. They are so scared that everybody hates them, that they hate the Arabs with a vengeance, and that they are literally programmed to do it. And everything Israel says is backwards. You know, it's always backwards. You know, they always say the Arabs want to kill all the Jews, but if you look at the actions of the Arabs and the Jews, well, it's the other way around, you know. But again, you go back into the Jew word. It's not the Jews. It's the Zionists. It's all Zionist programming, the whole thing. But you're not allowed to use the Z word because it's anti-Semitic. I mean, it's a hell of a system they've set up.
We got to just see over this, you know. Yeah.
You've got to give them credit for this system. It's amazing. But the significance of what's going on in Gaza now is that it is legitimizing ethnic cleansing. And Benjamin Netanyahu has been trying to kickstart World War III for a long time, and he's been trying to get the whole Zionist culture has been trying to get all the Jews to come back to Israel. They need to bolster them. They need to have this really strong military force that believes the whole world hates them. So with the brutality that they are unleashing on the Gaza Strip, I mean, the anti-Israeli sentiment on the planet at the moment, I mean, these guys are way down at the bottom of the barrel. And you're seeing a lot of hatred for the Jews. You're seeing a lot of anti-Semitism come out. So people that are not related to this, good Jews in other cultures that have been living there in peace for years, are now starting to get flack. So they're trying to bring, they want the world to hate the Jews because they want all the Jews to come back to Israel. It's part of the plan. They're running through the Revelation script. You know, it's a script. They're running it. You know, you can see so clearly what they're doing here. But this has been a long planned and well orchestrated event. The whole thing, the kidnapping of the three youths, the posturing for 10 days when they already knew they were dead, the destabilization of the entire region before they actually went in to do this. It's all been part of the same plan. And like World War III, people are worried about World War III coming along. World War III is already happening. World War III is a war of the elite against the people. I don't even want to call them elite. The Zionists, the controllers, the 1%. It's a war against from the 1% against the 99%. And unfortunately, most people are too programmed and too brainwashed to see it. It's like the world's in a state of mass hypnosis. It's quite frightening, really. And there's so many rabbit holes people are going down. It's shocking, you know. Even the free man movement, I'm free now. I know how to do this. I know about the name. I don't have to pay attention to the rest of the world. They don't get it. I'm free. It's ridiculous, you know. It's all programs.
Yeah, we're all part of the world, whether we like it or believe that or not. We are on the chessboard. The world is the chessboard, and if you're not dead, you're going to be on it, and that's just how it is. And we face challenges and situations where we need to deal with the threat that we're faced with, and that certainly is the case. I mean, I think that in terms of speaking out against the actions, I think it's more important now than ever, and I think a lot of people are doing that too. But that there is across the board, recognition that what is happening here in Palestine is not something that is agreed upon by the other. And I'll use the word Jews in this case, because if that's how they identify themselves, so be it then. But you can call them Zionists or whatever you want. But the idea here, though, is that these are also people that are dictating, if we look at the Zionist infiltration of our governments, of the morals and the control of the media around the world, then it's a way of life that is dictated to everyone else, which is never, ever applied to the Jews themselves or the Israelis or whatever you want to call it. I mean, for example, we even have organizations that argue in terms of how to prevent, Jews from marrying outside of their own race, for example, why the rest of the West, at least, are urged to, do everything they can if they want to preserve their own race, they're racists, and etc. The double standards in every department, this is just one of them, of course, but in every department, when it comes from war and terrorism to morality and ethnicity and everything else, all we have to do, I think, is just to continue to point out these massive double standards that seem to apply to them, but not to everyone else. And I think that this continued, violence against the Palestinians is just a prime example. And I think that if there hasn't been this hatred that you mentioned before directed towards them for what previously has been going on in the world, it certainly is on the ramp up, as you said. Now it's almost like they're creating this prediction of theirs, if you will, is actually coming true because of their current behavior, you know?
Well, exactly. It's a plan. It's a planned, orchestrated event. Benjamin Netanyahu wants the Jews around the world to be hated because he wants them have to come back to Israel, because it says so in the book. You've got to come back. It's in the book. If you don't come back, it doesn't work. You've got to come back, so I'm going to make you come back. It's all very well orchestrated. And the media, the media bias in this case is unbelievable. It's taken propaganda to a whole new level. It really has. And people are always talking out there. You got to talk to someone on the street and they go, oh, it's because Hamas won't accept the ceasefire. But what is the ceasefire? What are the terms that Israel offers these people? You give up all your weapons and we will continue to keep you in the prison and randomly bomb you and let you die slowly. Or you don't give up your weapons and we'll bomb you now and kill you quickly. That's the choice that they've got. You know, people have to understand what Gaza Strip is. You know, and you can go back to Germany, go back to World War II. It all comes back to World War II. World War II is one of the biggest propaganda exercises ever.
Yes, it is.
It's absolutely incredible. This is another thing that I go through in the presentations I've been doing. And the level of propaganda that we saw in World War II and what we heard post-World War II is phenomenal. Nothing else.
No,
it's like nothing else. And it's provided the backdrop for all this to be able to occur.
Exactly.
And books, I urge people to read. There's a talk. Go and look at Mikko Pelo's talk, General's Son. I recommend people go and look at that. You'll find it on YouTube. It's a fantastic understanding of what actually happened with the whole division of Palestine and the creation of the State of Israel. I urge people to read a book called The Transfer Agreement by Edwin Black. Fantastic book. Shows that there was actually, in 1933, that the Zionists had basically crippled the German economy, and Hitler was backed against the wall, and he said, look, I just get out. So I'll honor the Balfour Agreement. I'll fix it all up for you, because the Britons didn't do it. You know, so he basically got 60,000 Jews, gave them $100 million and sent them all down to Palestine.
And then they stabbed him in the back after that.
Exactly. They stabbed him in the back. Yep. Well, they stabbed him in the back to do it to begin with. They stabbed Germany in the back in World War I, which is what created the Great Depression, the whole stuff in Germany, which is what created the whole World War II, everything.
Yep.
It all comes back to the backstabbing of the Zionists to Germany in World War I.
Yeah.
And the biggest people who suffered in World War II really was Germany, the German people.
Absolutely.
And the stigma that they've had to deal with since then, the collective guilt of the German
and
population.
And the money and everything.
So unwarranted.
Yeah, and the money
The money they've had to spend.
Endless amounts.
Everything. Yeah. German people are the ones who truly, truly suffered in World War II.
That's right.
And I consider one of the greatest crimes of World War II to be the bombing of Dresden.
Yes.
Which was full of refugees, mainly women and children, and happened after the ceasefire. And that was Winston Churchill, when carpet bombed Dresden and did what Israel is doing to Gaza now.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was absolutely shocking. So, and some of these things that happened when the Russian troops arrived, like women being raped to death hundreds of times a day, and just horrible,
children
horrible
even.
Stories. Yes, and the German people that Eisenhower trapped in prison camps and just left there to starve. But what happened in Germany at the start of Germany? Something that was a parallel, which kind of you can look at Gaza now, was the Warsaw Ghetto. You know, now if the Jews are so persecuted from what happened in Germany, they need to remember the Warsaw Ghetto. When Hitler invaded Poland, they got the Jewish quarter, they meshed it all up in barbed wire, and they just left the people there to die, cut them off from everything. And when they started to complain and fight back, they called them terrorists and wiped them all out. And this is exactly what Gaza Strip is. It is Israel's version of the Warsaw Ghetto. Yeah, these people didn't learn anything from World War II, you know?
Well, exactly. I mean, I have my reservations and a lot of question marks at this stage due to all the propaganda that we heard of what actually happened during and after, just as you said, during the Second World War. But in this case, it's clear that the conditions that are created now in Palestine are, just as you say, are absolutely mimicked. This is the real prison camp.
Exactly.
Gaza is the big concentration camp, you know what I mean?
Exactly. It's the world's biggest open-air prison. And if the Warsaw Ghetto situation did indeed happen the way it's told us, the way it's depicted to us, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't make the call. All I know is the history that's been given to me. But if that did actually happen, then why is this race, the people who set up Israel, now doing exactly to a T the same thing to what the Germans apparently did to them?
Yeah.
And not only that, but doing it to 1.8 million people, 900,000 children who've never known any other life but to live in that prison camp. And I went to Gaza Strip in 2012. I went there with Ken O'Keefe, and we just thought, let's go in. Ken went, well, I got the key to the city. I was there on the Mavi Marmara, at the key to the city. We know some people. Hey, let's get in, because Egypt won't let us in. Nobody will let us in, so let's just go in anyway. So he had some friends in there, some rebels, and we found this little tunnel, which was not a Hamas tunnel, not any of these official tunnels that you hear about. This was dug with kids, by teenagers, and it was 50 meters underground. It was a tunnel we had to crawl through for most of the tunnel on our hands and knees. It was over, I don't know how long it was. I mean, I couldn't honestly say how long it was. It must have been over a kilometre, could have been a mile, could have been longer. I don't know. We were underground for an hour and a half, crawling on our hands and knees. And we started a long way from the border, and we came up in a blown-out building in Rafah underneath this collapsed staircase. And we got into Gaza Strip. We got taken to a safe house. Then we went into Gaza, into central Gaza Strip, right near the boat harbour there, and we rented a unit and I hung out for 10 days. Now, I ran around Gaza Strip with a video camera. We made videos. We got up on the roof, made videos, and put them on YouTube just to let the world know where we were, that we were in Gaza Strip. And we were holding the video camera in a manner so that you'd know exactly where we were in town, because we wanted everyone to know where we were. We wanted people to know what building we were in, because we'd entered this country illegally. We wanted the world to know, hey, look, we're in Gaza Strip, because, you know, I mean, anything could happen to you, and all would be on our passport was Egypt. No one would know what happened to us. So we made this video, and we let the people in Gaza know where we were in the manner that we made the video. And then, sure enough, the next day, Hamas come and knocked on the door and came and confiscated our passports, which was an interesting thing. It was an interesting feeling being in Gaza and not having your passport, you know. But they came, knocked on the door, they confiscated our passports, and it took us 6 days to get them back. They actually gave us our passports back about an hour and a half before we were to leave. We said to them, look, we've got to have them back tomorrow because we've got a flight out of Cairo the next day. Can we please sort of leave, you know? And they were, you know, it was interesting because, like, we'd entered this country illegally. We didn't ask anybody to come in. This is a war zone. I'm running around the streets with a video camera, completely unprotected, okay? This is this hotbed of terrorists, is it, okay? I mean, I've gone in there to have a look for myself because, you know, you go to these places, you get a sanitized version. They show you what you want, what they want you to see. I didn't want that. So Ken and I just snuck in through this tunnel and we just wandered around. He went and saw his friends and sorted stuff out and basically left me to my own devices. I went up to the Ministry of Detainees. I interviewed people there. We went up to the university. We spoke at the university. And when Hamas came and pounded on the door and confiscated our passports, they basically didn't confiscate our passports right then. They pounded on the door and they said, we would like you to come into the Ministry of Interior tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. to discuss your presence in Gaza. And we thought, well, that's pretty good. I mean, they didn't sort of kick the door down and put us up against the wall with Kalashnikovs and run us off to jail for entering their country illegally. So we went in the next morning and we surrendered our passports to them. They held them for 6 days. They gave them back about 12:30 in the afternoon. No, about 11:30 in the morning. They gave us our passports back and they said, you've got to be at the border by 1 because the guys on the border know you're coming and they will let you through. You can't go out across Rafah Crossing because Egypt will arrest you because you came in illegally.
Right.
So we've got to send you out through one of our official tunnels. So you've got to be at the border by 1 o'clock because the guys on the morning shift know you're coming and they'll let you through. We told them that it's okay, but the guys on the afternoon shift don't know you're coming and they'll arrest you. So you've got to be there by 1. So it was kind of a rush to get to the border. We got to the border and we're there at one of the official tunnels and they said, well, okay, before you can go through, you've got to come and talk to the head of Hamas border security. So I went and saw him and they've kind of driven us, they've put us back in the car, they've driven us down the road, we've gone into this big compound, looks like a big sort of police prison sort of thing, big high wall, barbed wire. Gone into this compound, then we've gone into an inner compound with another big high wall, barbed wire, and then this big metal gates closed behind us. And we thought, well, this is interesting. Now we're in an inner compound with Hamas. And they're taking us into the office, and there's 5 Hamas in the office, the head of border security and 4 other guys. And they say, okay, we want to know how you got in. We're not going to let you out until you tell us how you got in. We want to know where the tunnel is. And we thought, this is interesting. Here I am being interrogated by Hamas. I'm in a prison compound. So I'm thinking, I wonder what's going to happen here. And I'm just talking. We're talking through our interpreter. Ken's doing most of the talking. He's saying, where's the tunnel? We're going, we don't know. It was some little tunnel the kids gave us. We might be able to find it from Egypt. We wouldn't know here. It's some blown up building. We were disoriented. We'd been underground for an hour and a half after 4 hours sleep and blah, blah, blah. You know, all sorts of stuff. And, you know, one of the Hamas guys comes in and he offers me tea and biscuits and I'm eating tea and bickies with Hamas while they're asking us where these tunnels are. And they're asking me, is there any information on my computer which would let them know where the tunnels are? And I said, no, there isn't. And they didn't bother looking. I'm thinking, okay. So then they're saying, okay, after 3 or 4 hours of this in a room, they said, well, okay, look, we're going to take you outside and we're going to put you in a Humvee and we're going to take you into town and you're going to show us, we can retrace your steps to where you came, because we went into town, caught a cab and into Gaza, you know. And we're going to take you back into town. You can retrace your steps for where you came back. And we're going, we'll never find it. And by this time, Ken's getting quite belligerent with them. Ken's swearing at them. And we don't know where your effing tunnel is. This is bullshit. We're never going to find it. Rah, rah, you're wasting time. It's getting done. He's been getting quite angry with them. And I'm thinking, this is an interesting way to talk to a terrorist organization, you know. And so they take us out. There's this Humvee, a big black Humvee. They open the doors. They get in the back, and I look in the back and say, well, there's an AK-47 on the back. See, would you like me to keep that? Would you like to take that in the front with you? And he sort of goes, oh, sorry. And he grabs the AK out of the back seat. Ken and I get in the back seat, and they're driving us around town trying to find this tunnel. Meanwhile, they've sent our luggage off. They've lost our luggage, all sorts of stuff, which was, I figured out later, they're actually searching and trying to find some evidence of who got us in. And all this stuff's happened. We haven't found the tunnel. They've ended up taking us back to the border, back to the first tunnel we were at. And then they walked us through this tunnel. The head of Hamas border security walked us through this tunnel, gave us both back our passports, said, look, sorry for losing your luggage. So we will waive the $100 fee for the tunnel. But it's getting really late now. And we know you've got a driver here, but we don't trust him. We recommend you use one of our Hamas drivers, and he will get you back across through the checkpoints and make sure you get back to Cairo safely, because it's getting dark. You're just a couple of white guys out in the Sinai. You don't want to be out in the Sinai after dark. You know? So he's provided a driver for us to get us back to Cairo safely, and he said, I'll find your luggage and I'll send it on with your other driver. So after we got back to Cairo safely, 2 hours after we arrived, another driver arrived with our lost luggage. Hamas sent it after us to make sure we had our luggage okay. So that was my experience with Hamas, the terrible terrorist organization, okay? They gave me TNBICs. They provided a driver to get me back to Cairo safely and sent my lost luggage after me. And I broke into their country illegally and ran around with a video camera for 10 days. I think if I broke into Israel illegally and ran around with a video camera for 10 days, I'd probably still be in jail.
Right.
You know, so the people that I met in there were the most beautiful, kindest, generous, down-to-earth people. I built a whole bunch of schoolrooms, school desks for these school children. These children have so much light in their eyes now, so strong now, such beautiful people. And every single thing you've been told about Palestinians is wrong. Like I said, with Israel, everything is backwards. Every single thing they say is backwards.
Yep.
The real terrorists in this organization is the Israeli government. And this incursion into Gaza is some of the most brutal terrorism I've ever seen.
What do you make about was it 1973 that the creation of Hamas was actually kind of instigated by Israel, that they helped to spawn the organization, and it was one that kind of got out of control or whatever? Who knows what that is? Even if that's the case in 73, it doesn't mean that it's the same people or organization even today. But what do you think about this idea that they try to set up the controlled opposition as a means, of course, to continue to bomb Gaza and other places in Palestine as well, so that then actually can not only create the conditions where they continue to terrorize Palestinians, but also this idea that they can just continue to kind of shoot rockets into the area, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a really, really confusing situation, the whole Hamas thing. I mean, there was sort of the skeleton Hamas was formed quite a while before then, but then they kind of got the power that they've got now from Israel. Israel put them in place as opposition to Fatah. But a lot of the locals kind of joined Hamas. Hamas is kind of made of civilians. These are freedom fighters. It's kind of a legitimate resistance, because that's what it turned into. It turned into a legitimate resistance. And there's always talk of the way Hamas seized power through violence in the 2006, 2007 election, 2005, right, somewhere back then. But it wasn't. Hamas didn't seize power by violence. What happened was that Fatah tried to maintain power by violence, and Hamas was forced to use violence to oust them because they wouldn't leave. They refused to leave. That's what actually happened. That's what the people in Gaza told me. Hamas didn't start that problem. It was Fatah that started the problem. And there were Israeli soldiers on every corner at the time, and they did nothing to stop any of it. They just let it all happen. But what happened with Hamas? I mean, a vote for Hamas basically was a vote for no checkpoints and no more settlements, a vote for autonomy, a vote for a government that wasn't going to let us be dominated completely by Israel. And so because that happened, Israel said, well, we are all terrorists, you know, because Hamas is a terrorist organization. But they put it in place. They put the whole thing in place to destabilize it, to get rid of Yasser Arafat. Yasser Arafat was a wonderful man. Yasser Arafat was the only true voice for peace in the whole Middle East for years. And no one would ever listen to him. He was painted as a terrorist. And it's all backwards. It's always all backwards. But with Hamas now, I mean, I think there's certain groups that have been infiltrated into Hamas. And certain people that have been infiltrated. I mean, the rockets, it's ridiculous to keep sending these rockets over. They don't do anything. But they're the only weapons that they've got.
Yeah, the Qassam rockets or whatever they're called, right? I mean, that's largely like home-built rockets. You know, I mean, it's not they can't really guide them that well. You know, but I'm always surprised, and please continue on that thread as well, but I'm always surprised that there isn't even more effort to, I mean, I'm not saying that they're not fighting back or anything, but even that there is even more. They seem to be tremendously patient with the situation that has occurred, to be honest, to a certain extent. And I'm also surprised that there hasn't been I don't know, more even rich individual Arabs that come to the rescue of Palestine and trying to ship in more weapons and everything else and try to help them out. I don't really know what's going on around in the surrounding regions. I understand that it's locked down in the Gaza Strip, of course, but even from other parts of Palestine that there should be support, you know?
You can't, yeah, no, but you can't get in. You can't get in, Eric. All of the talk of Iranian rockets and stuff going into Gaza, it's a joke. You can't get anything in. The tunnels that they've got, we're only in Rafah. All of this talk that Israel's got, they're digging tunnels to get to our – this is rubbish. There are no tunnels around there. There's a huge buffer zone around that wall. You would have to dig these in ridiculously long tunnels to get through to Israel and having no idea where you're going to come up when you come up in Israel. It's not possible for that to occur. The buffer zones are huge. The buffer zone is at least like half a mile from where there's any Palestinians to the wall, and you can't cross it. They just pick you off. If you go out there in the buffer zone, you get too close to the wall, they just shoot you from the guard towers. So you can't get across this area. The only tunnels that were there were at Rafah border, and these were tunnels that were used to bring in much-needed supplies, diesel to run the generators, because sometimes there's only electricity for 2 hours a day sometimes. Electricity is off for 2 to 18 hours a day, depending, you know. So and when I was there, it was on for about 8 hours a day. You had electricity when I was there. So it's impossible to get all of this stuff in. And to get across the Sinai, I mean, it's checkpoints up the ass, man. There's so many checkpoints across the Sinai to get anything through there. There's no way. I mean, Israel and the Egyptian government, which is completely subservient to Israel, through the whole Oslo thing, this is all – I can't remember the name offhand. I'm a bit vague at the moment. I've been at 3 hours sleep a night, but it's such a controlled area. You cannot get this equipment in. So even if people wanted to give them weapons, you can't get them to them.
Right.
And even giving them money, there's a lot of money in Gaza. There's a lot of wealthy people in Gaza. They just don't have anything to spend it on. I mean, you can't even get the basics of concrete or steel or anything that could possibly be used for a weapon. You can't get it. If these people want to rebuild their houses, they have to go out onto the buffer zone and go and collect blown up buildings and repowder the concrete to use to rebuild their buildings when they get blown up, you know?
Yeah. Even from the Egypt side, let's say, because, I mean, obviously even with, let's say, the Muslim Brotherhood in more influence, position of influence in Egypt, there would be some kind of support from this end of things. But I guess not. We're not seeing that, I guess, right?
I think, like, the Muslim Brotherhood, look at what it's done. Look what the result of Morsi and all of this sort of stuff. I think the whole thing was a setup. But the whole Arab Spring was designed to destabilize the region. The Muslim Brotherhood is actually an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood is these Islamic Jihad guys who are actually in Gaza, in Rafah. This is one of the reasons that Israel uses to say, oh, look, there's terrorists. They're giving – this is why Hamas is a terrorist group. See, we can prove they're a terrorist group because they're giving aid and cover to this group.
Right.
Islamic Jihad. And these are all offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. These are all Egyptians. They're not Palestinians. And they're in there. These are probably half of the guys that are firing all the rockets and stuff, you know. So it's a real mess in there. But the rockets provide the perfect excuse that Israel needs to cry victim. And they look bad. You've got all these big smoke trails.
We don't even know if that's the real deal. I mean, we don't even know if it's who it's shot from. I mean, obviously it would make sense for them to get their boys in place that could do this as a you know, sting operation, as a way to blame it on the Palestinians, while at the same time it might be a completely different people actually performing these rockets going into those parts of Israel. So we don't know. We don't know who's doing it or what their ideology or allegiances are ultimately.
Exactly. But, you know, my experience in there was beautiful people, and I had no trouble with Hamas at all. And these rockets, they look terrible. Like, because they're fertilizer packs. They're only powered with fertilizer, so they leave these big, long smoke trails. So they look quite impressive, you know, but they don't do anything. They put a hole in your roof. They put a little hole in your wall. They'll kill you if they hit you on the head, but that's about it. It's a joke, but it's a perfect excuse they need to do what they're doing. But what they're doing is unprecedented. They're leveling whole neighborhoods of people. They're ethnically cleansing the entire Gaza Strip, turning it to rubble. They're shelling hospitals.
Their land has been taken over. This is what any sensible human being would do. They would fight back and resist the takeover of their lands. I mean, I understand them. That's all I can say.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's live on your feet or die on your knees, and that's the point that they've been in. They've been under the siege for 7 years now. They're denied the most basic necessities of life, and they've said, "Well, look, you know, we can't go on like this. We have no dignity. I was speaking to my friend Omar a couple of weeks ago. He said, well, we have no anything. We have no jobs. We have no sea for the fishermen. We have nothing. We have no dignity. If we have no dignity, we prefer to die. We can't stop fighting. We can't live like this. You know?
Do you think it's just about kind of tiring them out in a way so that people will, because it is an endurance test to be part of something like this, but with kind of an endless stream of money and weaponry as Israel has to its disposal, they can just year after year, decade after decade, soon almost a century, continue to keep this kind of tactic out up to kind of, I don't know, tire out those who decide to still stay in the Gaza Strip. What do you think?
Well, there won't be anybody left in the Gaza Strip after this incursion. If the world doesn't step in, and that's the problem. They're destroying hospitals. They're destroying everything. They're turning the whole place to rubble. And again, this is a population, 1.8 million people, 4.5 miles to 5 miles wide, 25 miles long. This is a very, very densely populated area. With the amount of damage they've done now, the amount of body parts and with all the water system down and the hospitals all blown up, and there's no way to help these people. No one can get to them. The only thing that's going to happen, it will have to be an international peacekeeping force from public pressure. That's the only thing that's going to save the people in Gaza Strip. Otherwise, there will be no Gaza Strip. It will become a housing estate for Israel. That's what we're seeing here. It's blatant ethnic cleansing, Henrik. If we don't stand up, and people have to realize what this is government approved ethnic cleansing. All of our governments are approving of this. This is showing us the wave of the future. This is we coming to a town near you if you don't pay attention to this now. And I say this to people,
this
and say,
is
oh,
coming. Yeah, of course. No, but this is happening already. Ethnic cleansing is just it's happening in Europe right now. It's just happening on a long term plan with replacement level migration. I mean, this is what they do the best. This is what they always been up to. You know, and since 48, since this atrocity occurred overall. And I mean, I think that the reason, again, as I went back to before, why more isn't being done about it is because we have so many complicit people in our Western governments that are allied with these Zionist interests, and that's why we don't see any viable criticism and speaking out against it, you know?
Exactly. I mean, the influences are everywhere, especially through the media. And also, it's been such an ongoing conflict. Gaza, Gaza, Gaza. Oh, Israel and Gaza. No, Gaza, that's that hotbed of terrorists. Why don't they just get rid of it? Oh, they are. Excellent. We won't have Gaza in the news anymore. They're sick of hearing about it. They want to know about it. And it's all been set up perfectly. People are just sick of hearing about it, and they think they're all terrorists. And they just think, oh, it's another bombing raid. Oh, they're just bombing Gaza again. They're always bombing Gaza. That's the thing with people. I've had people say to me, oh, well, they're always doing this. So it's just, you know, old news for them. Even if it's new news, it's old news. That's the problem, you see. They're sick of it.
Yeah.
And the bias of the media, even when I was reading a headline the other day and it said Israel resumes bombing. Israel resumes bombing, resumes shelling raids as Hamas refuses to accept humanitarian ceasefire.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was the headline. Now, it resumes bombing, resumes as if it's just business as normal. Well, we're just resuming the shelling. It didn't say Israel continues its vicious assault on Gaza Strip, you know, while Hamas calls for truce, because that's what's happening. They're calling for a truce. We don't want a ceasefire and back to the status quo. Leave us in prison now that you've turned the whole place to rubble and leave us cut off from the world. We want a truce. We want you to take the blockade away. We want to live like normal people. We'll stop firing if you'll let us live like normal people. But that isn't what we're getting in the headline.
Yeah.
And that's really what it should be. Israel continues its vicious assault upon Gazan refugees or Palestinian refugees while Hamas calls for truce. That would be a more appropriate headline, but it's spun as Israel resumes shelling while Hamas refuses to accept humanitarian ceasefire. So it's such spin. The level of spin is phenomenal in this case, and people just buy into it, and they're sick of hearing about it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think the latest headlines I checked out earlier was basically, Hamas refused to abide by ceasefire or something like that was the latest one I saw. But I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, Israel has a quite a border wall there, you know, cornering in this whole area in Gaza there. And it's amazing to me as well that we have people, for example, in Europe. I hate to belittle this point quite a bit, but I do want to bring it into the context here so people know what's going on. When we can watch Israel be on one set of behaviors, and then we have a different set of behaviors in other parts of the world. But basically, Israel has a gigantic wall for a border. And then, for example, when Italy wants to try to prevent more immigration, or when the United States wants to try to do it, of course, they're demonized in the press like nothing else. And we can even see, for example, we have organizations actually in Sweden that get taxpayer funding to actually bring in as many immigrants as possible. It's Barbara Spector, another Israelite. She made Aliyah, so she is actually an Israelite Jewish lady, and she's sitting in Stockholm talking quite openly about how she is going to bring in as many immigrants as she can into Europe. And she claims that we have to do this to survival or whatnot. So it's like, go back to Israel and stay behind your wall if that's what you want to do, but don't try to force this upon Europe, you know?
Well, it's a way of dividing and conquering. You see, you'll never get your society to stand up against your government for what it's doing if you've got a divided society. So they present this as multiculturalism, but the way they do it is they make sure it creates friction. They'll bring in a whole bunch of people from one country and put them here, and then they'll create that sector, you know, like you'll get, like over here in Australia, you've got the Italian place, and you've got the Chinese place, and you've got the Cambodian people, and they all live in the one suburbs. You know,
yeah.
And when they come to your country, your government gives them all of these subsidies. And so they think, this is great. This government's great. They look after us so well. It's much better here than where I was. But, of course, they make sure that the locals feel bad about all that. Oh, look, all these foreigners are coming and they're getting all these subsidies that I don't get. You know, are they taking my jobs? So it creates all this animosity. And when the government starts doing bad stuff, well, you're never going to get a united community because you've got the little world war going on in your community because you've got all these people being subsidized for different things and everyone's jealous of everybody else because of the government set it all up that way.
Yeah.
So you'll never, ever have a united community which will address the corruption in your government because half the people think it's great. It's a lot better than where they came from.
That's right. You
know? And immigration would be okay if people integrated into the society. I'll go and live in Italy because I want to be Italian. I want to live that way, the way the Italian people do. Yeah, I love this stuff, you know. That's why you want to go and live in another society. You go live in Thailand because you want to live in these little humpies and tumbos and live in the jungle and do this stuff. Why go there and create your white sector in Thailand? Why have a Thailand come to somewhere and create the Thai sector? Why not merge with the culture? If you're going to have that culture and go live in that culture, then be part of that culture. You know, even culture, I mean, how this word's been hijacked and been created as something that it is. I mean, to me, culture is art, you know, the art of you, the art of being Swiss, the art of being French. You know, the art of being Australian, it's an expression of art. It's the art of your life, who you are. You know, this is culture, but it's been hijacked to what it is now, this obscene thing that we call culture, you know. So
it's a facsimile, as they always do with everything. They take it over and claim it's one thing when it isn't. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. This is what it's about. It's about creating those kinds of divisions of, mass immigration is a disease, and multiculturalism is a lie, and it's about creating a global monoculture. Eventually, of course, as you say, in the meantime now, will be these small pockets of everyone everywhere kind of thing, at least in the Western world. But it's a big lie, and people have to get their eyes open to this idea that it's done for the purposes of creating conflict, creating division, either if that's on ethnic basis or religious or cultural basis. But they have to realize that it's done against their own, you know, good intentions, basically.
Oh, it is. Absolutely, it is. And it's always presented as multiculturalism is good. It means, you know, all appreciating each other's cultures. Yeah, it is. But let's leave each other's cultures in their respective countries so that we can go and enjoy that around the world.
Yep,
we want to travel the world. Everywhere you go, it's the same as everywhere else. You know, if people like coming here, let's turn it into everywhere else. So that everywhere you go, it's the same. I mean, I've traveled, and everywhere I go, there's the same cafes, there's the same little sidewalks, it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's just this horrible, whole homogenized reality.
Corporate culture.
Exactly. And everybody loses their own reality and their own experience of their own country and you know, who they are. They lose their identity through this, and you just become this thing and this homogenized species, and that's what it's all about. And it creates all of this division, and then they can just start tightening the strings, tightening the purse strings, making things get harder and harder, and start creating so that, okay, these guys are taking my jobs and these guys are taking, and we'll end up killing each other. You know what I mean? So we do it ourselves, and then they can just sit at the top and pull all the strings.
Yeah.
And you set all of these cultures against each other. We all start screaming at each other, and then you create things like they're doing in Gaza now. I mean, it's all leading to this terrible reality, and people just aren't noticing. And they should, because I think Gaza, like I said, I think this is the most important event since 9/11, this incursion into Gaza now, this open slather ethnic cleansing with the weapons of nightmares right there for the world to see. This has taken things to a new level. This is showing what they can do and will do if you complain about them. This is what they will do if you set up your little alternate community and you dare speak out against the government. You might be a terrorist, and this is what we do to terrorists. Terrorists can't hide in civilian positions. We'll just take out the whole country.
Oh, that's what they'll do. This is the future urban warfare, you know. But and you're right, of course, this total insanity on all this level of all this globalism and everything and the war and everything we're seeing needs to stop. But Max, let's just take a quick little break here, and then we'll pick right up after that. I wanted to talk more, of course, about your trips down to Gaza, what can be done, some of the previous cases that we've seen with the flotilla and Rachel Corrie and all these other atrocities that have occurred, and where to go from here. I want to get you more on your take on Arab Spring and actually the kind of destabilization of the region in all. So much more to get into and talk about. But give our audience a reminder of your website where people can go to hear more of your stuff. And then you're taking off soon as well, you said. Give us where are we heading again, Max? Remind us.
Well, I'm going to the Boom Festival in Portugal. I've got to speak there next week between the 6th of August or the 4th of August and the 10th of August. I'll be speaking sometime there. Then I'm speaking somewhere in Lewes in England. I'm speaking, I think I'm doing a gig in Cornwall. I'm doing a few in the UK. I'm speaking at the Entheon Science Conference in Berlin, which I think is the 12th or 13th of September. And I'm speaking at the Open Mind Conference in Copenhagen on the around the 20th of September, I think, as well. There might be some other gigs in Croatia and a few things there as well. Might even get to see you, Henrik. You never know.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to see if I can make it to the Open Mind Conference in Copenhagen there. So that would be nice, but I don't know how the schedule looks at that time, but we'll see what is happening in September. But that's some good events to check out. Give us your website as well, Max.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the crowhouse.com is my website. There's also a website called gazashield.com if you'd like to sign up to there. If this hostilities do cease, well, I would like to take a team in there to help clean up. I don't know whether we're going to be able to, but it would be great if anybody wants to help with that to sign up to gazashield.com, and we'll just see where we go with it. So, yeah, the crowhouse.com, gazashield.com.
All right, good stuff. That's the website. We'll have those linked up, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us, Max. We'll be right back after this short break. Sophia, Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll return after a short break here to talk more with Max Egan about his time when he visited the Gaza Strip and, of course, what is happening down there right now and what can be done to bring more attention to this issue to show the world the policy of Israel. We'll talk more about Zionist-controlled media, previous atrocities like what happened to American Rachel Corey, who was crushed by Israeli bulldozers. We also talk about the Gaza flotilla and the many people that were murdered during this trip. We continue to talk about the huge problem of Christian Zionism, who continues to support Israel no matter what. This is on the basis of religious programming, and that these people are, according to a book they themselves wrote, a people chosen by their God. Much more is coming up with Max Egan. Don't miss it. We'll continue in the second hour with our conversation in our members area, redicemembers.com, where we have all our shows archived in full. We do not have commercial interruptions or ads, so to continue to listen, please sign up for a membership and get full access to our vast archives. The majority of what we do is for free, but we do have a lot for you in the member section as well. We have, of course, RSS feeds and instructions on how to get the full show to your smartphone or other devices. You can subscribe with iTunes or other podcast apps and readers. We are also working on a new and much needed updated app design right now. And of course, you'll get access to all our videos, films, and other material. RedIceMembers.com. We'll speak to you there. Thank you for staying with us.